Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, so when do we finish? 9 o'clock? What's the latest? When do we finish? What time does class go till? 9:15. All right, thank you. Is it my accent or is it the sound system or what? I have difficulty being heard clearly. That's okay. So for the next 3 days, instead of the regular Srimad Bhagavatam class, we'll be having some talks on Srila Prabhupada. This is from a series that I've been presenting over the last few years called Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. Yeah, we have two kinds of Bhagavatams. There's the book Bhagavat and there's the person Bhagavat. So this is also Bhagavatam if we're talking about Srila Prabhupada and his activities. That has the same potency as hearing about all the personalities in the Chaitanya Charitamrita or all the personalities that are featured in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're all on the same level, and the benefit of hearing about them is equal. Yeah, when we talk about the pure devotees of the Lord, they come in many varieties in different pastimes. The Lord himself also appears in different forms just to accommodate the activities of his pure devotees. So in a similar way, just as, let's say, Lord Nrisimhadev, he incarnated just for the pleasure of his pure devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. And according to the time, place, and circumstance, he took a particular form and enacted his pastimes. Same with Lord Vamanadeva and so many other incarnations. So in a similar way, Prabhupada said that the incarnation of the Lord in Kali Yuga is the Harinam, the name of the Lord. He appears in the form of his holy name. And Srila Prabhupada was that devotee who induced the appearance of the Lord all over the planet. Yeah, other persons had tried. There's a little story I'll tell before we get into the seminar about Columbus and friends. Some of you may have heard that story. In mid-December 1976, Prabhupada was at the Hyderabad farm, New Naimisharanya. And at that time, his house was not quite ready. So we were staying in what was actually just some little storage rooms, and they'd been cleaned up, and Prabhupada moved in one of those for a few days. So it was like a brick, just a single brick building, and it had a tin roof, and the front entrance, it was high, and then it sloped down towards the back of the room. So at the back of the room, it was only about 5 feet. And there was an almirah, you know, these metal cabinets at the back. And the top of the cabinet just touched where the roof came down. The cabinet was like that. So somebody came in for a darshan, and they gave Srila Prabhupada a small picture of Radha and Krishna. So I immediately, it was in a frame, so I immediately gave it to me, and he told me, now you put it on top of the almirah. So I went and I was trying to get it to fit between this very small gap between the roof and the Elmira, and I couldn't do it. I was trying it this way, that way. After about a minute, Prabhupada saw that I couldn't do it, so he got up, he came over, he took the picture off me, and he just went boom. In 1 second, he had it right where he wanted it, standing up on top of the Elmira. So I tried for about a minute and couldn't do it. He just took it, and immediately the same, you know, gap was there, the same picture was there, but with Prabhupada, boom, straight in, no problem, 1 second, it was done. So it was funny, actually, the way that he did it. He laughed, I laughed, there was a few other devotees in the room. We were all laughing at Prabhupada's dexterity and his ability to do something that his young disciple could not. So when Prabhupada went back and sat down, he said, everything requires a little intelligence. And then he said, you know that story about Columbus and friends? So I had not heard that story, and of course I was eager to hear it, and I was hoping Prabhupada would tell us. So I said, no, Srila Prabhupada. So he said, so there was Columbus and friends. This was after he had discovered America. So his friends were telling him, actually, no special credit. Yeah, anybody could have done it. The ships were there. America was there. You just got on the ship and sailed across the ocean, and you bumped into it. Anybody could have done it. It's no special, you know, ability or credit for discovering America. So Columbus was insisting, no, actually, took intelligence. No, we don't accept. Anybody could have done it. So then he said, all right, I'll prove it to you. So, okay, prove it. So then he took an egg, a chicken's egg. He said, now any of you, you make this egg stand on its end. So each one of them, one after another, they took the egg, they put it on the table, but of course it was falling all over, it wouldn't stand up. So everybody tried, everybody failed. Then Columbus took the egg, then he said, now I'll show you how to do it. So he tapped the egg on the table and flattened the shell and stood it up. So the egg is standing there. So then they said, well, anybody could have done that. He said, no. He said, you say anybody could have done it, but you tried and couldn't do it. I did it. So you have to give me the credit that it took some intelligence to find America. Because the ships were there, America was there, but I was the one who found it. So in the same way, when Srila Prabhupada was preaching Krishna consciousness, spreading the holy names, that opportunity there was for everybody. It was well known since the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that these predictions were there, that the holy name would spread all over the world, Prithivi Chai Chai Jato Nagaradi Gram, Savatra Prachahoi Bay Moranam. And it was predicted somebody would come and effect that prediction. And of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in his preaching, he had very definite plans about preaching in the West. Yeah, in 1933, he sent this team of devotees, Bon Maharaj, Sambidananda, and Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha, and they were sent to England with the mission to establish a solid center for Krishna consciousness in London, which at that time was one of the chief city in the world because of the British Empire. So his plan was that if they were successful, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati himself was going to go to England and stay there and then use that as a, you know, what they call it, a breachhead, a staging point. We would use it as a staging point for spreading Krishna consciousness to Europe and America and so many other places. But after 2 or 3 years, these three devotees had been there, and they were receiving from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati 700 rupees a month, every month. That was a huge amount of money in those days. But he was keen that they be successful, so he made sure that they had enough so that they could live there, they could travel, and they did go to Germany, and they were preaching in England, trying to preach. But after 2 or 3 years, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati became a little disgusted, and he called them back. And he made it publicly known that he was not happy with their endeavor. So that was in the mid-1930s. Now in 1922, of course, Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was given that suggestion, if you like, instruction, that he's an educated young man, he speaks English, so he should take up this Krishna consciousness movement and preach the glories of Lord Chaitanya through the medium of the English language. Because at that time Prabhupada had, wasn't formally following any, particular institution or society. But his family were Vaishnavs, so he knew the tradition. But at the time he said, I was not able to take it up seriously. He said, I was thinking when I received that instruction that this is very nice. I met a very nice sadhu. And I'd like to do something. He became convinced, actually, at that first meeting. But he just was newly married. He had a young wife. I think maybe at that time he possibly had one child. And he was just getting established in his Grihastha ashram. Well, not ashram at that time. But he was just getting established as a married man. He had responsibilities. So he was thinking, I'll take up this instruction at some point. First, I need to make some adjustments. So later on in 1976, he said, in this way, I was making adjustments for over 40 years before I could take it up seriously. But so 1922, he got that instruction personally. And in 1936, in December, 2 weeks before the departure of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Prabhupada again got the same instruction, that you're an educated young man, you use this English language and do good for yourself and do good for others. So he took that very, very seriously. But it's not that Prabhupada was the only one who was given that instruction. The team had already come back from England. They'd been a failure, but it was well known that, this instruction to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world or outside of India, it was well known to all the disciples that this is what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted. So the same opportunities were there. The philosophy was there, the books were there, the practices that had been introduced in the Gaudiya Mat, for strictly following Krishna consciousness, the institution for spreading Krishna consciousness, it was all in place. And, of course, the countries were there. The British were, in one sense, I suppose you could say, ripe. They'd had a long history with India. They understood to some extent the Indian subcontinent and its peoples. They were spread all over the world. The British had spread the language at least all over the world. So all the different elements that were required for establishing Krishna consciousness and making this prediction come true, they were all there. But nobody did it. Everybody else had the same opportunity. Anybody could have taken it upon themselves. I'm going to fulfill Guru Maharaj's wish to spread this movement all over the world. But nobody did. Only Srila Prabhupada. So you can argue that anybody could have done it. And I've sometimes heard that said. That, Prabhupada did it. But actually, even if Prabhupada had not done it, somebody else would have done it. So in this way, they try to minimize the achievement, just as Columbus's friends were minimizing his achievement. So in the same way, sometimes we hear this minimization of what Srila Prabhupada did and the extraordinary endeavor and intelligence that it took to be able to do it. And Prabhupada did it with no help. He wasn't receiving 700 rupees a month. He landed in America with $7. That was it. Finish. Nothing else. And his books. But somehow out of nothing, Prabhupada was able to create what is now, you know, a very powerful spiritual society operational in all the countries practically of the world, or most countries of the world. Yeah, it's like a seed of a banyan tree. It may be the same size, you know, as a castor oil plant seed. But if you plant the two, when they come up, a banyan tree is massive. And not only does it just grow, it extends out, it puts more roots, it extends out, puts more roots. It becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you let it run, it will become massive. It will, you know, there was one banyan tree in Calcutta that was said to be over 1 mile wide. Yeah, from the original trunk. So a castor oil plant, a little skinny thing, you know, it also comes from a seed, but the seeds are different. Yeah, they produce something different. So Srila Prabhupada, he took the seed of devotional service and he did something extraordinary with it. Yeah, he spread Krishna consciousness all over the planet, and it's still spreading to this day. It has not ceased. It's still picking up momentum. And we haven't seen really, you know, the peak of ISKCON's expansion. We hope that it will go on for many, many more lifetimes, generations. It will become ultimately what Prabhupada predicted it would be, as the main religion in the world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they all said the same thing. That ultimately this Krishna consciousness philosophy will be recognized as being the highest of all expressions of the human condition. Yeah, that it will recognize the spiritual nature of all living beings, which is something that no other religious process at present can do. Yeah, there's no other religion in the world practically that goes beyond the bodily concept of life. Most people think they are this body. Even the most religious people think they are this body. So where is the question then of real spirituality if our consciousness is anchored within this, you know, frame of flesh and blood and bone and stool and fat and marrow and hair and so many things? Yeah. But Krishna consciousness begins at that point of recognizing the difference between spirit and matter. So you'll find everywhere in the world, when you talk about spirit and matter, people have no real understanding of the difference between the two. They confuse this. When they talk about spirit, they're talking about the mind or the intellect. But actually, as spirit souls, we're totally different from the body, mind, and intellect. And we are of quite a different nature. And Krishna consciousness is meant to help us discover what our true nature is so that we can become actually happy. Prabhupada was once asked, what is the goal in life? Prabhupada looked at the reporter, he said, to be happy. That's all. To be happy. Everybody wants happiness, but the problem is that people don't know where to find real happiness, and therefore they're frustrated. And in their frustration, they're doing all kinds of abominable activities which will send them down. It will not elevate them, but it will send them down into the lower regions, you know, other species of life, and then it will be millions of births before they again get this human form of life and another opportunity. So out of a matter of compassion, Prabhupada took up this mission. He took up the words of his spiritual master and the acharyas before him, and he took it literally, that this movement will spread all over the world. The chanting of the holy names will go over all the world. One of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Srila Sridhar Swami, they were very close friends. So in 1975 and 1976, when it was becoming apparent that ISKCON was becoming a worldwide phenomena, you know, at that time there was probably about 80 or 90 temples. And we were on all the different continents. So it was becoming clear to anybody that was at least fair-minded that Prabhupada was doing something extraordinary. Some of his godbrothers didn't give him credit, but some of them did. So Sridhar Maharaj told Prabhupada, he said, actually, this verse, Prativi Chai Jatao Nagaradi Gram Savatra Prachahoi Bay Monam, he said, we actually didn't really take that literally. How the holy name can go to every town and village in the whole world? How is that possible? Maybe in India it can be spread. But they had doubts, maybe from, you know, the experience garnered in the 1930s when there was an attempt and it was not successful. So maybe they were thinking that then this is just some poetic glorification of the holy name, that it will spread all over the world, it will spread all over the universe. But they didn't take it literally. So in 1975, after seeing Prabhupada's activities, his godbrother Sridhar Maharaj said, actually he said, now we can understand you are the real Acharya because you have actually fulfilled this statement of Lord Chaitanya that it will spread all over the world to every town and village. We didn't think that it was actually meant to be taken literally, but you have actually done it. So at least he gave Prabhupada some credit for having some special intelligence, some special Shakti, if you like, some special level of surrender to Lord Chaitanya and his representatives, which enabled him to realize these predictions. So although the predictions were there, it still requires an individual to fulfill them. It's not automatic. It requires some special endeavor, some special kind of character, if you like, so that these predictions can come true. The Lord acts. He can, of course, do everything, just like the Battle of Kurukshetra. He showed Arjuna, all the soldiers on both sides are going to be destroyed. That's already done. But still, he didn't just step forward and say, I'm Krishna, all right, everybody dead. Right, everybody fall down dead. He could have done that, he's God. But he didn't. He told Arjuna, you have to fight. I'm going to do this, what you've just seen, this destruction of this army, but through you, not myself. Through you. And this is how Krishna works. Yeah, this is the reciprocation between Krishna and his pure devotees. They have a pact. They support each other. Yeah, they work together, not separately. Not that the pure devotees sit back and say, all right, Krishna is doing everything. No need for me to do anything. Not like that. Arjuna was chastised when he wanted to sit back and let, you know, other people do the work. Krishna told him, this is not fit for a warrior. Yeah, you have to step forward and do this work. So he instructs him in so many different ways. He gives him all the reasons why he should do something. But at the end of it, and this is really probably the most important part of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he tells him, Yatechchasi tata kuru. Now you decide. I've told you everything about karma and, you know, the nature of the soul and the nature of the material world and the influence of time and who I am, all the forms of yoga. Many, many different branches of knowledge were explained to Arjuna. But at the end of it, Krishna tells him, now Yatechchasi tata kuru. You decide what you want to do. So in other words, I provided everything, it's already there, but still it needs the surrender, it needs the devotee to step forward and say, yes, I'll do it. I'm a soul surrendered unto you. However you instruct me, in that way I will act. So we can't minimize the achievement of Srila Prabhupada by saying everything was already there. He just happened to be the one that did it. Yeah, it's not Columbus and friends. Yeah, Prabhupada was there, Krishna was there, all the ingredients were there for making this movement successful, but it required the full surrender of Srila Prabhupada in order to bring it about and to make it manifest. So this year, of course, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada leaving Calcutta on August, Friday the 13th of August in 1965 and setting sail for the West. So 50 years. Yeah, now we're celebrating. I just recently we were at the 40th anniversary of the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. I was just in Australia last month. We celebrated the 40th anniversary of the opening of the Melbourne Temple by Srila Prabhupada. We also celebrated the 40th anniversary of Prabhupada going to Perth, where there was no temple at that time, but he went there for about 10 days. So these anniversaries are coming up. Somebody made the comment, one of my godbrothers, that actually these 40th anniversaries are more important even than the 50th anniversaries, simply for the fact that a lot of the Prabhupada disciples that are still around for the 40th anniversaries may not be around for the 50th. So, you know, we have to take advantage whilst we can. And of course we've seen that, yeah, just shortly after the celebrations in Vrindavan, Brahmananda Prabhu, now he's left us. Now Kumarupa Prabhu, who looks after the cows there, he's on his way out. And so many other devotees, Vishalini, Gunanava's wife, she was one of the early devotees in the Vrindavan temple. She's also now got some serious cancer disease, etc., etc. So it's going to go on more and more. Saurabh built this temple. He designed this temple. He designed the Vrindavan temple. He designed the Hyderabad temple and so many other places. Now he also, he was at the festival, but looking very depleted, and he's got cancer of the stomach. So who knows how long he's got left in this body. So we're celebrating, you know, these festivals. It's an opportunity to avail ourselves of the association of those devotees that were there, you know, right at the very beginning, like Brahmananda and Gargamuni. That story in short form of Brahmananda joining and all the service that he did for Srila Prabhupada, that's told in that small book, Swamiji. So it's an excellent little book. At least it gives us some perspectives from Brahmananda's point of view. But it's one small book, but he had nearly 50 years of service behind him. So how many volumes of books could he have written if he'd sat down and seriously applied himself, you know, to the task? So the same with so many devotees, at least the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. It's our duty, actually, to write whatever our experiences were and see that that history is preserved. Because if it's not properly preserved, within a few generations it will all be lost. Prabhupada will become a mythological character like Lord Jesus. Nowadays most people, a lot of people don't even believe that Jesus exists or existed 2,000 years ago. There's so many doubts, where's the proof, etc., etc. So one of the important things that we have to do in this Krishna consciousness movement is preserve the accounts of the development of this movement and how it spread all over the world. In 1977, Prabhupada was on the train from Allahabad to Calcutta. We'd been to the Kumbh Mela for about 4 or 5 days. And then we traveled overnight to Calcutta. And Prabhupada's secretary at that time was Rameshwara Prabhu. It was Rameshwara Swami at that time. He'd come on for 3 weeks to be Prabhupada's visiting secretary. So they had long talks on the train through the middle of the night. We're zipping across the country. And Rameshwara and Prabhupada stayed up for many hours discussing all different points about preaching. So at one point I remember Prabhupada told us, he said that history will record this time. Yeah? History will record this time how the Krishna consciousness movement saved the world. So that sounds like a bold statement. At that time, of course, we had about 100 temples, many of them very small. You know, we weren't a big, powerful organization. We were just in the beginnings. But Prabhupada was already predicting that in the future, the time when he took this Krishna consciousness movement around the world and how it spread, you know, all over the world, that will be a record, an important record for historians in the future, that it will have a very powerful influence on this planet. So it's our duty, whilst we still can, if there's any Prabhupada disciples still around here in Bombay that haven't yet written down their experiences. I saw an email actually yesterday or the day before, somebody from Secunderabad. He's offering that any Prabhupada disciple that can remember anything, record it down and we'll publish it for you. Yeah, we'll provide all the artwork and the editing and we'll publish it. Because they've started to realize now that this is a limited commodity. We're on the, you know, dwindling side, not the expansion. The moon waxes and wanes. So at least the generation of Prabhupada disciples has waxed and now it's waning. And then you'll get to the new moon and then there'll be a fresh one starting. So we should record what we can. We should preserve Prabhupada's teachings as best we can in different ways. We have in Calcutta a project, the Bhaktivedanta Research Center, which maybe at some point we can show, a slideshow, where we're doing that kind of endeavor. We've actually obtained the original library of the Bagbazar Gaudiya Math, which was established during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So you could say it's practically the personal library of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So we have that at our center, and there's about 2,500 items, many different books, many rare books, Padma Purana by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, different original writings of Bhaktivinoda, original writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and very important documents. We have the actual last will of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that was written down and witnessed by four devotees about 16 hours before he left the planet. So these are very precious items, and Prabhupada himself commented when he was informed that there were some original writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur at his birthplace in Bianaga, that these things should be preserved at any cost. He said they're very, very precious. This is a treasure trove of Vaishnav lore. They must be preserved for future generations of Vaishnavs to see the actual handwriting of these great acharyas and be inspired by them. So somehow or another we've started that project for the last 6 years. We have a lot of those original writings that we never expected to get. But if we'd not done that, then I can only imagine that many of these artifacts, well, let's say in Bianaga, they have the original handwritten autobiography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Swalikita Jivani. They still have the original. But when we saw it 6 years ago, it was literally rotting away. The bugs were eating through it. It was falling apart. So another 20, 30, 40 years, it would have been finished. It would just be dust. So somehow or another, we're working together with the management committee at Bianaga, and we've actually scanned all of their library, including about 25 works by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many others by his son Lalit Prasad and others. And then after that, we've done some preservation work to make sure that they'll last, you know, at least for the coming couple of next century or two centuries or whatever we can. So it's very important for us to do that. If we don't preserve the heritage that we have, then in the future, people will start to think, you know, Prabhupada, what he was teaching is all a myth. Just like nowadays, nobody believes, or many people, even in India, they don't believe that Krishna was a real person. You've got your big, big leaders, Gandhi and, you know, modern leaders. I've read a few comments of, you know, different chief ministers in the south there when there was this debate going on about the Ram Setu, yeah, the bridge between India and Sri Lanka. The chief minister got up and said, this is all a mythological nonsense. Yeah, this never existed. Ram was never a real person. So similarly, they say Krishna was not a real person. Yeah, or some people do that. So in the same way, if we want to avoid that, we have to preserve everything that Prabhupada gave us very carefully and pass that on generation after generation. And in one sense, you can also see, just like in Mayapur, 100 years or so after the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, the place was flooded. Nobody knew where the original birthplace was. So it went on for hundreds of years when nobody knew actually the exact site, the yog pit, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his manifest pastimes. It wasn't until Bhaktivinoda Thakur came and did some serious research that he realized that it couldn't be over in Nabadweep, where there was one temple was claiming to be that site. And by divine inspiration and guidance, by his sincerity, they were able to find the original site of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth. Now Mayapur is beginning to develop. And if you read about the importance of Mayapur, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that's the place that's directly Swetadweep itself, and it's the place from where pure devotional service emanates all over the planet. But the point is that it was lost for some time. Now, the same kind of situation was there during the time of Lord Chaitanya with Vrindavan. There were many, many of the pastime places in Vrindavan that had been forgotten. Nobody knew where they were. There was Vrindavan village was there, some forests were there. But Radhakund, where was Radhakund? When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan and started his tour, he saw in the middle of some field, some small impression, pond. And he immediately started bathing in ecstasy in that pond because he recognized this is the same kund that he had dug as Radharani 5,000 years ago. But nobody else knew it even existed. So one of the important functions that was given to the six Goswamis and other direct followers of Lord Chaitanya was to go and live in Vrindavan and recover all the lost places of pastimes. Very important. Because otherwise, if you don't have a manifestation of the activities and pastimes of a particular individual, if you don't have something that carries forward after that personality has left our vision, then very quickly you'll start to think it's all myth. Didn't exist, it's just some made up, you know, fairy tale or whatever. But if you actually have identified the places where all these different pastimes took place, the lifting of Govardhan Hill, killing of Dhanukasura, or, you know, so many different wonderful activities, because we have places that we can go and see, that strengthens in our mind the importance of these pastimes, the reality of those pastimes. But if there was nothing there, then it's just forgotten. Yeah, in human memory is very short. So after a few, you know, generations, everything is just gone. So it's very, very important for us to record everything that happened, you know, in terms of the development of the Krishna consciousness movement in the modern age, from the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada. This is the beginning of a new era. And you'll see in the same way that Lord Chaitanya encouraged his immediate followers to go to Vrindavan and uncover these pastimes, places, in the same way the instruction was there from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He found the plot of land where the yog pit stands. He gave the responsibility of building a big temple there to his son. That was completed in 1936. And now we see Srila Prabhupada doing his little something to further that goal of unveiling and uncovering and exposing the holy land of Mayapur Dham to the whole world. It was hidden for many, many centuries. Now its time has come. Just as when Lord Chaitanya appeared, the time of Vrindavan's revival came also. So in the same way with Lord Chaitanya's followers. Now, 500 years later, we're seeing the time of Mayapur is coming, where it will be recognized as a Tirtha, the most important Tirtha in the whole world. Yeah, that's Mayapur. Because for this age of Kali Yuga, the only religious process is to chant. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it's very, very incumbent upon us. Yeah, because in the early days we had to work very hard to establish all these different places. I say we, I didn't do a lot of work, but Prabhupada and his disciples did. And everybody now, you have the opportunity, you come in, everything's set up, everything's pukka, everything's, you know, opulent, and there's prasadam, and, you know, there's places to stay, and it's highly organized. But it wasn't like that just 30, 40 years ago. Yeah, in those days, in the beginning days of this temple in Bombay, when Prabhupada got this land, they moved on, the deities were put in a tent, and then in a little tin shack, and the devotees were living in tents on the ground with all the rats and other rodents running around. It was very, very austere. Yeah, but with some perseverance and some faith, some realization of what Prabhupada was trying to achieve, now you see something very, very wonderful, yeah, which has influenced hundreds and millions of people and changed their lives for the better. So this is our Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada has given us a legacy, and that legacy means that it has to be handled very carefully. Not that like spoiled rich men's sons. Prabhupada gave the example sometimes when a rich man, you know, he has his children, so the children don't have to work. They just take everything for granted and they squander it. There are many histories like that. Some rich young man, he just ruins the whole family fortune by his foolishness and lack of responsibility. So we don't want to be rich man's sons. Certainly we're rich man's sons and grandsons. But we don't want to be irresponsible. We have to look after everything. We have to preserve it in exactly the way that it was given to us by our previous acharyas. And if we do that, then we can be sure that the Krishna consciousness movement will continue to expand and its sphere of influence will always increase. As long as we follow the standard procedures and practices. So